welcome back to another episode of the Kansas City Leaders Podcast. We are excited to kick off our first episode of season two, and I am excited to welcome Jose Rouse to the Kansas City Leaders Podcast. Jose is a multifaceted artist whose work has significantly impacted the Kansas City area. His contributions span across visual arts, writing, teaching, community involvement, making him a prominent figure in the local art scene. His story is one of cultural transition, community building, and artistic expression. So welcome to the KC Leaders Podcast, Jose.
Hi, thank you. I'm glad to be here.
All right. So for our listeners, they can find you on...
Carido, Q-A-R-I-D-O on Instagram, and Jose Faust on Facebook.
Okay. Yeah. And they can see your artwork all over Kansas City.
Yeah, and I think I have connections or, yeah, I have stuff put on the accounts as well, so they can see it in there.
Okay, so definitely they'll be able to see your artwork. Yes. So where are some of the places that we can see your murals?
Oh, God. We did a series, kind of a community project over in Kansas City, Kansas, along the downtown area of Minnesota. Mm-hmm. These were some murals that were done with kids in the neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And others with myself and a partner, Alicia Gambino. And then there's two prominent ones down in the River Market, the Steamboat Arabus on one, and then the Lewis and Clark Town of Kansas celebration. And then they're all over the place. Some on Independence Avenue, down along Independence or North Old Northeast, and then some in KCK. There's one in, I think the very big one that we did was... down on Metropolitan in the Argentine district, which is kind of an anthology of the area. It's what we looked at.
I got a chance to read some of your history and bio and involvement before we met today, this morning, this afternoon. You in your murals, or it seems like in some of these, you do a lot of the community involvement. Like you have smaller scale projects where kids in the area can get involved. Mm-hmm. Or people in the neighborhoods are able to come out and contribute to the murals?
Yeah, some were funded by community organizations. Mm-hmm. And there's always this sense of bringing the community in, but that also sometimes means like making them a part of the process that can help you with them. So I think of the first one we did, the mural in Argentine, that was as big a community effort as ever. I mean, this thing is... two blocks long, 660 direct linear feet.
It's huge.
Yeah, and it's about, so it's like two football field lengths, more than that, I guess, maybe. And then it's about 19 feet average height.
Right.
And so we had to have a lot of help. It was our first big, big challenge. And a lot of that help came from community organizers. There was a group called Las Tecas of the greater Kansas City. They had a lot of members. They came out. They helped us with setting up scaffolding, moving scaffolding, unloading supplies. We also had meetings with community people to find out from them what was important about their story. Argentina has a very unique history, but not unlike a lot of immigrant communities. Mm-hmm. So it traces roots back to areas in Mexico for the community, the Hispanic community that's moved in there. So there was stories to tell. And so that's where we had to engage community.
What I might end up answering this question with my next question, but why murals? Let's start with that one. Why murals in particular? You are an artist in a lot of different areas, but getting up on scaffolding and scaling on that kind of level is a whole different thing.
Well, it's funny because I mean, when I was in art school, our references, I think the things that stuck to me the most. Where they, you know, art history is full of a lot of large spaces reduced in a picture, very small. But I can remember, so you're reading about the Renaissance and you're talking about the work that they did and you're realizing they're painting these huge murals. I mean, you look at just the size of the Sistine Chapel, right? Or you look at like one of the big classical paintings you see is The Last Supper, right? And they're not small paintings. These are large canvases on walls. So there was this idea that I always wanted to go large. I am not a very detailed, fine line-oriented kind of painter. I enjoy drawing that, but I like broad strokes. I like the broad canvases. And for me, it just thought it was also kind of this idea. it's very democratic. So if a mural is outside or never in any place, I mean, if it's large enough, it's obviously meant to be seen by somebody. There's an interaction. There's a communication that's being transmitted from the large painting, the large scale of it, to you as somebody looking at it. Mm-hmm. And you may not have any understanding or reason for why, especially if it's a community component. So you can draw so many different inferences about what this is about. But there's something that happens when you see that large work in front of you. And I can tell you the thing that fueled a lot of that for me, like one example that encapsulates that, and I tell this story. I happened to be at MoMA many years ago, and I was walking through the rooms, and I remember I came to this one room, and literally when I looked ahead of me, I was so stunned. I just remember putting my back up against the wall and just sliding down to my haunches and just sitting there and looking at it. And what it was Guernica, Picasso's famous painting about the Spanish Civil War and the atrocities that happened in the Basque town of Guernica. And I was going, it stunned me, one, because it was so large. Mm-hmm. And you got to remember, I had only seen it like in reproduction, like a 3x5 in art history books. Mm-hmm. Never anything bigger than that I can recall. But then when you saw it there, and you just, yeah, the huge, yeah, and all of a sudden it's like compositionally, everything was perfect about it. I mean, it literally was. And it's not, there's no color in it. It's black and white and grays. And it was so powerful. And I knew the history. I was had read a lot about the Spanish Civil War. So it's just like all of a sudden it was peace. It was important to me. And I thought, wouldn't it be great if I could have that same experience if I'm just walking down the street and I turn a corner and boom, something like that hits me, right? I don't mind the experience of a museum. I love going to museums. Mm-hmm. We have a great one here. But there's just another aspect of it. And then to be able to paint something of that magnitude was like, that just seems nice. You know? Yeah. Yeah, it just seems like, here, Jose, come and paint something.
Mark, yeah, yeah. Like in a really impactful way.
Exactly.
So, that does lead me to this next question. You've had that unique experience of seeing the community before one of your murals and then after. Mm-hmm. Do you see a transformation? What does it look like?
It's like, I think I took it for granted because I think sometimes we do things because we kind of have a sense that this is the way it's going to turn out. But until it happens and you tangentially can see that it happened and you're there and you see it, you really don't understand it. You think you do. You hope. It's a hope more than anything, an aspiration. But I remember when we started painting the mural in Argentina. I always tell this story because I don't know what made it unique in that moment, but it was a sound I heard. We're sitting there, we're painting this mural, and we're literally like 2 weeks in. And behind us, this wall, it's a concrete wall that extends down 2 blocks. But behind us is houses. Mm-hmm. But at that time, you couldn't see the houses because there was all this overgrown brush and trees and dense foliage. So you didn't even see houses. You couldn't see it. And you could tell there were peaks above the stuff. And the reason was that the wall we chose to paint on would get full of graffiti all the time. And not nice graffiti. It's just painted tags, gang signs and stuff. And then people would gather along the strip of grass and drink beer, break bottles. The city didn't even bother really to do a lot of cleanup on it. So it was just a place nobody wanted to see. But when we started painting that mural, I remember we're sitting there, we're taking a break. And we'd go across the street and just lay there in the grass. And I heard this noise like a chainsaw, right? The guy's cranking it up. And he starts cutting. We thought, that's kind of odd, you know. But I don't know why we thought, but it did. But as we're watching, I think like about half an hour, you see the tip of the blade cut through the brush that was there. And so he's like, wow. And it turned out later, the guy that owned the house told us, I wanted to see what you guys were doing, you know? And the thing that was amazing is like within 2 to 3 weeks, that whole block started cleaning their backyard. We started to see people's yards. And in fact, people would invite us to come and have food or drink with them. But they would sit there sometimes and they'd have little parties and we'd be painting. So we knew we were watching. And that to me was like the most tangible evidence that that's what happens when you do community stuff, right?
Interesting.
Yeah, because they just opened it up. It was amazing. We didn't even know. There was a little, actually, a little side alley that kind of goes, it goes into a neighbor's yard. But I would have never thought that it looked like it was a street that went down there, right? Yeah. Never would have seen it because it's just was not visible from the road.
But in that little act of creation, you pulled people out of their normal day to day and created that curiosity element, which branched into a whole new way of
The interactions,
getting to explore. Yeah.
Yeah. The interactions from community was just awesome. I mean, and I was actually, there were three of us that were organizing, Jesus Ortiz and Alicia Gambino. I was working at a law firm at that time, and I was working outside. Mm-hmm. I was working outside of the city. I moved away for about a year and a half. So I was coming in and on when I could. And then we had made our chance to go ahead and paint this mural. So they did a lot of the community research. Mm-hmm. And then when I came back, as we started to paint, I had quit my job by then and wanted to do that full time. So I didn't get as much of the community involvement, but I already was familiar with the neighborhood of Argentine. Mm-hmm. So it was like, yeah, it was connecting and getting to meet a whole group of people that just had community in mind, right?
So could you tell me a little bit about your background and how you ended up here? Because you have a little bit of a different story than other guests that we've had.
Yeah, I'm an immigrant. I was born in Colombia, South America. My mother moved up here. She married a guy that was in the Air Force stationed out of Fort Leavenworth. Mm-hmm. And she moved up here with my sister. Later, her and my stepfather had another child, my brother, my younger brother. But my brother and I, the other brother, we stayed with our grandmother down in Colombia until my mother could find her way, find her place, because she was also coming as an immigrant, right? Mm-hmm. So I think it was like about 4 years before.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
You were 9 when you came over here,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. So my mother came, I would have been about 5 when she came.
Okay.
And then when it was time to come, we were said, you're going to go see your mother. And I think for me, the experience has always been that my brother and I had really no clue that we were never going back to Colombia. Mm-hmm. We thought it was a visit. And we came here and it was anything but a visit.
Right.
You know, it became, this was where we ended up being settled.
I watched your videos, and for our listeners out there, if that's okay with you, I'd love to post that link. It's a fantastic video. You did a presentation, a cultural presentation, and there was a lot of your background and how you growing up and coming here. It's a poetry, which I thought was very, very lovely. So I would
is
like
that
to
the one where I have
there.
The blanket on. I did one with a blanket.
No, I didn't start with a blanket.
Okay, good. No, it's not. That's not a bad one. It's just I'm trying to figure out. I've done so many, I forget. Yeah.
We'll definitely put that on there, and some of the other links to your different social channels and properties there. Because I think a lot of people have seen your work around town, but they may not know who you are or get to put that face with the name. You came here when you were about 9, and you ended up in Kansas City.
Yeah.
Have you been here since then, or you've moved about, or?
Outside of, I added it up. It's like 7.5 to 8 years I've traveled and lived somewhere else. I lived in Omaha for 3.5 years, and I said a year and a half I was in North Carolina. And then other times traveling and being in other places. Mm-hmm. But yeah, pretty much this has been the reference place, the home. Yeah.
Yeah. Why Kansas City?
I ask myself all the time. Honestly, I do. I think when you're displaced in a way like my brother and I were, with no real thought that this was going to be home until we got here and realized, in a way, you're trapped, right? So there's this thing called like Arrested Development. Mm-hmm. It was a great show. There was that, and there was a band, I think, that had a song Arrested Development, or they were the band. And it always stuck in my mind as kind of being indicative of what my brother and I went through. I mean, we land here, we're 9 and 8 years old. We speak a language that, well, we moved to the West Side, so people spoke it there, but not everywhere that we would go. Music was different. Even though we lived on the West Side, there was some music that was very familiar. But if you went out into the broader community, it was the music I'd never heard. Food was very different, you know. We lived with a lot of immigrants that came from South America, Ecuadorians, Peruvians, Cubano even, but they were moving out. So food was different, and music was different, and sounds were different. And for us, that community that we brought into, that was our community. And that was like people, I remember my brother and I learning English because a lady that was a friend of my mother that worked at the church where my mother was working at, would sit with us and go with us and read little books and then kind of make us pronounce the word and repeat it back to us, right? So it's like felt like this very extended family thing.
Yeah.
So for me, that's always stuck in my mind. So when this happened yesterday with the shooting, the first thing I thought about is I did not know her personally. I had seen her at events, but I knew people like her brother, and I knew people that dealt with the family and everything. And I had I had tears in my eyes, and I think it's because I always make a joke about certain communities, how tight they get, right? And the Latino Hispanic community in this town has always been kind of, you know, I've been accepted into it. And it's always this idea, I tell people, you know, you got to be careful when you're around some places, because if you throw a rock, you're going to hit somebody's cousin, right? And that's the Latino community I've known, the West Side, Northeast, go out to Belton in some areas. You hit somebody, you're going to know somebody. It's somebody's cousin, right? And that's the way I felt. I mean, I think I carry that spirit with me a lot. When I leave Kansas City, I know when I come back, it's kind of like that's a community I'm familiar with. And I think that really, it's people. Mm-hmm. It's people really that keeps you here.
I think in the wake of yesterday, there's going to be a lot of holes in those communities that are going to be challenging for people to deal with. And, you know, here on the show, our hearts go out to everybody that's been affected. And just as a quick note, I did see somewhere on the news today that Johnson County was going to be offering support counselors. Good. So if anybody out there is needing to talk to somebody, please reach out to those. We can put those on the site with the episode. Because it is a tragedy.
Oh, a big tragedy.
But I will say, it is interesting here that we're having this episode talking about leaders in the Kansas City community, because it's been my experience. I've just moved up here. So mm-hmm. I've been here for off and on about a year. So okay. I'm still integrating into the communities. And one of the reasons that we wanted to start the podcast is because of all the people that we've met. There are mm-hmm. such a wide variety of people who mm-hmm. have such a depth of knowledge and experience and the way you've helped shape communities around you. We wanted to kind of celebrate that. Mm. So there's my pitch for the Kansas City Leaders Podcast. Coming back to some of the questions, Jose, for you, how did you get into your current role? And what do you find most rewarding about it?
I mean, role as artist or?
Maybe as a muralist in this particular sense.
I think there's always a lot of accident that happens in life. Remember that movie, The Accidental Tourist? Mm-hmm. I thought it was a great article for an accidental life. I back into a lot of things.
Okay, honestly. Then I want to back up and I want to hear about how you got into the artist bit. Because this is a bigger story here than just the muralist part.
I'd always drawn mm-hmm. and I'd always written. And it was teachers that had told me in grade school and high school, oh, that's nice, and had pointed it out as something that was worth doing. But I came from a family that the expectation was you were going to go to college. There are a lot of professionals in the family. And if anything, you were going to be something like that, right?
Not an artist.
So my mother was an artist, which is kind of strange. She was a dancer and professional, but that was not what she wanted for her kids. So college was always there. And so I thought, I like history. I like events and stuff, current, get into debates with people. So I thought I'd be a political science major. And I started taking a heavy load at Johnson County Community College. That's like 21 hours the first semester. And my brother came up to me and says, hey, man, you like to draw. You like to, be around art. I have this teacher. She said, I told her about you. And she said, well, if he wants to come in and draw anytime just to take a break, he's welcome.
Yeah.
And I said, okay. So I showed up. And of course, I walk in when they have a naked model.
I've had those classes. So
I think no matter what I said, I think she was hearing boy with hormones or something, you know? And but I told her what my brother had said, and she said, okay. So she gave me a large piece of paper, and literally she put me right in front of the model, as close as you and I are. And I think it was in the hope of, if I was jiving her, I was out.
That was a test. Yes. That was absolutely a test.
But, you know, it's like, I saw the body, I saw the figure, I had the pencil, it was crayon. I think she gave me Conti crayon. And I had this big sheet of paper. And I just started drawing. All of a sudden, it became not clinical in any way, but I was looking at something. I said, I can put this down here. Mm-hmm. And I remember after 20 minutes, she tapped me on my shoulder and she says, you're welcome to come the rest of the semester. I'll tell you the schedule and you can just come in and sit down and draw. You don't have to take the class. You don't have to audit. I'll just, you know, when you want to. And I remember going home that weekend and thinking really hard about it. And I went and looked at the class catalog and I said, oh my God, they offer degrees in art and in English. I literally had just a focus. I was going for a professional degree. So when I looked at the course schedule, I was looking, well, what would satisfy a political science degree? And that's what I was taking, American government, history, Western civilization. And all of a sudden, it's like, there's art, you know? And I remember that Monday I went in and I went right to my academic advisor and I said, you know what? I want to change my degree. And she said, to what? And I told her art and writing. And the sad thing about it is that she also was the one that taught one of the classes that I was taking for my political science degree. Mm-hmm. And I could tell she was disappointed. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I just had never thought about art as being something tangible that you could do. And right then and there, I split and became an artist.
It's funny when you kind of find it and it's like, whoa, wait a minute.
It was there all the time. And yeah, you didn't know, it's you like, know. Yeah.
There's something.
Yeah.
And for it to be, oh, that's awesome. You had a teacher that let you, that brought you into that.
She was an amazing lady. She, you know, and to even just say, okay, you know, that felt really good.
So in that vein, how, you know, taking that and giving back, what's an initiative or a project that you're particularly proud of and why?
Oh God, I'm.
Like, what's one of those things that stands out to you and you're like,
well,
I'm glad I did that one.
I could say that about so many things, but I think I'd have to say it about the first ones we did. And they weren't even done here.
Okay.
The way that we met and became friends, Alicia, Jesus, and I, is we had a gallery down in the Crossroads. It was that time right before it became the Crossroads. It was kind of a nebulous space. And we were going to lose the gallery. So we decided, why don't we go out with a bang and have a show? And I had run into a flyer from somebody that said, I'm putting up a show of Latino artists, mm-hmm. Hispanic artists in Kansas City. And it said, Azteca the Great of Kansas City. That's how we met Aztecas, who helped us later with the Argentine Wall. And I called the lady and she said, I have a roster of Latino artists. And I said, really? Wow, I didn't know there were. Because we didn't see them, right? This is like 1993, 94. So I reached out to her and I said, we want to have a show, and this is going to be the last one we do, and we have a big gallery. And that's how I met Jesus and Alicia. Mm-hmm. And then after we had the show, I'm sitting over at Jesus's house, and he said, how would you like to go to Mexico and paint a mural? And I was like, oh, heck yeah. Because, I mean, I wanted to do murals. Like I said, I had this idea of the large scale.
Right.
And when he said we can go, and he said we have a place to stay, we can stay there up to a month, they'll feed us, they'll take care of us. We just have to get there. And so we did, and we went. And that first project is what made me realize I was in the right track. Mm-hmm. Because we painted in another country. And I remember, even as much as I wanted to paint a big mural, I had never painted in front of people. It's like, for me, it's always been like a private thing. I paint in my studio, right in my garret or in my studio, whatever it is, my room. I never had an audience. And all of a sudden, we're at a school. There's like 800 kids running around seeing what you're doing. And I.
Who are fearless and will ask you whatever they feel like.
Hey, well, so what are you doing? It's like.
What's that?
And there was nothing on the wall yet.
Yeah.
I just had a piece of pencil and stuff. And I just started putting little sketches there. And I had a sketch I was going to work on, but I was so nervous that to have people watching me. And then I started drawing when the kids would go into class and I go, oh, free. Then after a while, after like 2 days of them constantly running around to see what we were doing, they just weren't there anymore. I mean, they were, but they were. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was like, Yeah,
it was like, is that trance?
Yeah, well, it was like, no, it was like the wind blows. Oh, here comes a kid. Okay. You know, it was like, yeah, it was okay. Just natural. It became part of the experience, like the birds singing off in the distance or the trees rustling. Here's kids. It's recess time.
Yeah.
And then after a while, we were just part of the environment for them.
You you integrated into the environment. You
were sometimes they'd come over and hang with us, and other times they were just playing their games. So it was really nice. Yeah.
That's very cool. Yeah. I was going to ask if, you know, working on a smaller scale project, you know, how you kind of get in the zone. Yeah. Does that translate on larger scale things an audience?
Oh, yeah, because
you're able to block them out.
You have to get in the zone in a way. I remember I went to Penn Valley, and I remember the last we had a final, and basically, what do you do? You're a painter. What's the final? Show up the last day, and he gives us canvas, and he says, you have 2 hours to paint a scene from inside the space. And I remember thinking, I'm looking all over the place. The minute I picked on what I wanted, time just stopped. I mean, literally, I just was so focused on doing what I was doing, trying to get it done. Finished the painting like an hour and a half, and I was done. And I don't recall thinking, you know what I mean? I don't recall.
That's a sweet spot.
Yeah, it's just the colors finally, the palette made sense to me. I was mixing the same colors. I had a limited palette. So I wasn't like messing around with a lot of stuff. Boom, boom. And that's kind of the way it is, I think. It doesn't take long for me to lose the sound. I listen to music sometimes. After about 5 minutes, I don't hear it. Mm-hmm. It just doesn't exist anymore. Mm-hmm. I'll listen and I'll have the headphones on. I think sometimes I'm just keeping people from talking to me.
Yep.
But I don't even think of it that way. I think I'm going to listen to music. I don't. I listen to talk radio. I don't remember half of what they say. Mm-hmm. Somebody said you should listen to books. I can't. After a while, I don't hear the book anymore.
Your brain is engaging in different ways. You have to kind of like help it get through that funnel into where you can do your thing.
And I resent it when I finally hear it. I go, oh, then I'm not concentrating on what I'm doing.
No, it pulls you out of it.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But it doesn't take long to go back in. Yeah.
Okay. So how do you approach collaboration? And I want to be clear, like you cover such a wide spectrum of mediums, from visual arts to poetry, music, et cetera. How do you approach collaboration and fostering unity on these big projects? Because there can be a lot of egos in there.
Oh, there is. And I remember when we started to paint that, I'll go back to the first mural we did. The first thing we figured out after we had an idea what the design would look like was, how are we going to paint it? Because all three of us have very different styles. One person is an illustrator. Another friend of mine is self-taught, but had very strong references. And me, I was learning, you know. And so it's like we have different attitudes. You know, we have different kinds. I like more abstraction sometimes. I like more dense color. Mm-hmm. The other had it wanted more like the more figurative model colors. Mm-hmm. And so it's like we sat down and we said, you know what? We have to agree on a style. And I think once you agree on that, that's kind of like that consensus building. So any collaboration has to have consensus, right? It doesn't just, it can work, but it can be a miserable experience.
Yes, it can.
Yeah, because then there's always somebody fighting about, I want it to be this way. Once you have agreed on something, then you just move on to the next obstacles, right? Mm-hmm. So collaboration, you have to have consensus. That's the first thing. The second part is that you have to really want to do the project as well. So it's kind of like, you'll say yes to a project, then you realize very quickly, even after you establish consensus, you really didn't want to do it. So it can show up sometimes. So you have to want to be engaged and open to whatever happens. Mm-hmm. I think I've worked improvisationally with musicians and dancers, even a person that looms, opera singer singing. And it's just, as the other part is trust. Mm-hmm. It's trust that what you're doing is going to work. And even if it doesn't like work all the way, there are moments that really work. And sometimes the moments are the most important thing.
Well, and I think, this is my personal opinion. Mm-hmm. I think we as humans tend to forget that the act of creation is imperfect. Oh, it's easy to destroy because, you know, that's easy.
Yeah.
But you're going to fail and start again, fail and start again. But each time you're developing that sense of where you're going and the craft that you're creating. So.
And sometimes that failure or that accident is exactly the thing you need to concentrate on.
Yeah.
Yeah. So when I teach, I tell people, you shouldn't erase only because it's not that it's because you always hear that, don't use an eraser or whatever. Mm-hmm. But it's only because sometimes if it's not a finished thing, you can see something in it that says, oh, maybe that's a better one. It's like in writing. If you write and you don't say it perfectly enough, but you want to get through it because you have this thought that's coming along, you can come back to that writing and say, ooh, wait a minute, that changes this. And all of a sudden it can take you in a different direction or it can be its own thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't, sometimes the accidents are the more interesting thing.
Mm-hmm.
I have a painting I did that was very specific, abstract painting. And I still have it only to remind me of this. A brush fell out of my hand and it had this red that was not in the painting at all.
Uh-huh.
I just was moving something out, working on another thing, and it hit that canvas and I said, it's ruined. And I remember some students had visited my studio and I was talking about them. And this one kid says, why'd you put that red on there? I told them, I like it. I still haven't reconciled myself to that because
mm-hmm.
I had a very specific mm-hmm. thing that it was very methodical. But it made me think because I look at that and I haven't painted it. It's been like that now for about 5 or 6 years.
There's a whole life lesson in
yeah.
that.
Yeah. And so I keep it in. I look at it until one day I'm going to look at it. I'm going to say,
you no, that kid's right. That.
I think I'm going to leave it like that. But I don't touch it. It stays that way.
Yeah. That's cool. I'm a huge fan of visual arts. I think it's. Yeah.
You're
think
a painter, right?
Mm-hmm. I think yeah. it's important for us as a species
yeah.
to have those. Interactions.
Oh yeah.
And I love one of the reasons I'm excited about being here in Kansas mm-hmm. City is this is it's such a art friendly city. There's a lot of at least from what I've seen, there's a lot that goes yeah. into, you know what's wild? Let me tell you this. This is such mm-hmm. a tiny, stupid detail, but it gets me so excited. The bridges. Mm-hmm. The bridges have decorative stonework in them.
Right.
Why? For no other reason that it's aesthetically pleasing.
Mm-hmm.
I love that.
Yeah.
Like, that says something to me about a city like this. So,
yeah. But those are disappearing.
Are they?
Yes.
I know.
I know the new structures that go up. I really do think there is something for that kind of decorative element that happens. And that idea that the town, you know, that's kind of like a vestige of something.
Mm-hmm.
But the idea too that the town celebrates the arts right now, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I can honestly tell you a time, and I will never forget this. There was a time when I left university, we did not have the art scene we have now. I remember a lot of my friends, artists, were too much. We would stay here and make us an art scene here, or they would leave.
Mm-hmm.
And most would leave, you know, and most would go into other directions and do art as a hobby or whatever. I can recall a one time when there were 4 major galleries in town. I can recall a time when there were 2 or 3 theater equity companies,
mm-hmm.
Maybe 2 dance companies, and one of them was the Kansas City Ballet. That was the art scene in Kansas City. Mm-hmm. There literally was no art scene to speak of. I mean, yeah, you could see it, you know, you'd have to go hunting for it, but there wasn't much.
Yeah.
But now, you know, like you fast forward or go back maybe 15, 20 years ago when the whole scene started with the Crossroads or got activated. There were other scenes that were popular,
mm-hmm.
but something happened in that mix that all of a sudden a density of people who were not artists started to come out and make it an event. And I think that gave a lot of impetus to starting it up. So now you can celebrate it as an art culture.
Yeah.
But it has a lot of organic roots.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah, it definitely, it takes the people who put it in place
yeah.
to get there.
And they weren't thinking about it either. They just said, eh.
True.
And you go down to the Crossroads now, and I know they're going to put the Royals said where they want to put the new stadium at.
Yeah.
It's right there in the Crossroads.
Yeah.
So it's like you go, well, you know, this whole thing came about because the artists got in here. They were living in these spaces. They were cheap, huge, empty. Nobody wanted to be there after 4 o'clock because there was nothing to do there.
Mm-hmm.
Now you want to put a stadium in it. And frankly, the Crossroads have changed. A lot of the galleries have left. Artists can't really be a huge component of it because they've been priced out of it.
Right.
But there's still artists there.
I mean,
there's still bastions there. But yeah, it's changing. It's changing quite a bit.
What are some of the opportunities that you see on the horizon for Kansas City in that vein?
In artistic, you mean?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well,
I mean, there's a ton of opportunities.
Yeah.
But for those of us who are looking yeah. for this, like I know people on Reddit who are like, where's the art scene? You know,
yeah.
they want to get involved. What can they do?
Well, I think you can make an art scene literally happen anywhere. I mean, in terms of, artists are always going to be looking for places. There's there's art scene that happens down in the West Bottoms, the River Market. You have artist communities there. You have artist communities in Kansas City, Kansas. There's an epic arts residency. They have a third Friday art scene there. It's really nice. It's really ample. There's a lot of different little community things that help, or businesses that are growing, as a matter of fact. Mm-hmm. You got Columbus Park. You've got places. There's the Englewood Arts thing that's happening over towards Independence, where it's this whole idea of taking artists as kind of bastions or people that can promote growth in areas that have been depressed mm-hmm. by either taking advantage of low income housing, you know, or low cost housing, financing, mm-hmm. Studio space. They create density, they create something like that. So that's happening at Englewood Arts. So there's a lot of little pockets like that. There's the Inner Urban Art Space out in Overland Park, mm-hmm. which pretty much was started. It's all do-it-yourself, grassroots idea that, hey, this has to happen. Then you find people that can help make it happen. There's a lot of that that's happening around town.
Are there any channels or paths that you know of for people to stay informed or connected with this?
Oh, man, just follow artists.
Okay. Okay.
I mean, artists, I mean, musicians, but define an artist as the very broad sense, creative producers, right?
Right.
We say artists and people think immediately visual artists, and that's it. That's, and then we talk about writers and we say, oh, these guys, they're artists too.
We have them too.
No, they're choreographers, dance.
Anybody.
Be curious. Go to a dance. If you've never seen dance, go to a dance thing. If you've never seen jazz, go to a jazz concert. There's this idea that somehow we have to only like certain things. A, because they're topical. A, because that's what everybody is louding and touting around. I'm not a Taylor Swift fan. Mm-hmm. I've heard some of her songs. I don't dislike them. And it's actually one I kind of like. But at the same time, it's like, would I say, well, that's not really music? No, because I think about like classical composers, right? Mm-hmm. They would take a genre, they would take folk music and incorporate it into the thing, and they become celebrated. Oh, they're relying on these folk traditions. But at the time, I guarantee you, somebody was saying, oh, that's just folk. That's like everybody.
Why are you remixing this thing? Why is everybody getting so excited?
This is not the classical thing, but it becomes the basis for Mozart, Tchaikovsky. I mean, you know, there's all of them had Copeland, Aaron Copeland. Mm-hmm. He's using Appalachian music, mm-hmm. Those traditions. You know, Joe Yoma plays some of this. You know, mm-hmm. so it's like, why should any kind of expression be foreign to you? If you really love and appreciate music, look, I grew up disliking country music like crazy, only to realize that some of my favorite songs were Johnny Cash songs.
Ooh.
You know, I mean, like Jackson, right? Got Married in a Fever, Hotter Than a Pepper uh-huh. Sprout. It's like, I'm going, man, that's poetry. Or Glen Campbell, you know, Gentle on My Mind. I think that's a beautiful song. Or Tulsa Lime, you know.
What was that like kind of coming to that realization that there's poetry in this place that you didn't even think existed.
Well, it wasn't I didn't believe it existed.
Right, I just
thought that it was not my kind of poetry.
Not your
right?
style. Yeah. Gotcha.
But then I sat down one time and I listened to, and if you listen to that whole, like I'll take that Gentle in My Mind, that whole, all the lyrics that are in it, because there's a shortened version, I think it's like 230 something second track. But if you get the whole thing, you see a progression of a guy thinking about a woman who he has this relationship with that is in many ways casual and easy, that he can, you know, keep his bedroll parked behind their couch. Mm-hmm. The idea that he can come and go, right? Mm-hmm. But then later, as he's sitting around some crackling fire or something, he's taking you through this journey of the things that he's missed. Because it is about loss. He's mm-hmm. sitting here drinking his coffee, you know. And that's an arc in poetry that is so exquisitely beautiful. So to me, that's one of the most beautiful poems, you know. And it just, but I can separate it from the music and read it as poetry. Mm-hmm. Then I can come back and with the music, it just fills it out. So mm-hmm. You have to be curious. You have to be, if you're going to really engage in art, be curious enough. You're not going to like everything, mm-hmm. right? But you're going to be surprised if you're open, just how many things you can blend together. And art really is always a blending. You know, culture comes out of all these disparate elements coming together. And at some point, you create a thing that somebody says, oh, that's Kansas City style. Mm-hmm. Graffiti artists do this very well. They, when you hear them talking, oh, man, this is East Coast. This is West Coast. I got Chicago. And you understand what they're talking about because they've studied those things. Now, they don't sit there and say, the only valid form is West Coast. No, I said, man, I got my own thing.
I know.
Up in Kansas City. This is the way I see it. And there is Kansas City stuff. And so you see it reflected, you know. And that's the way we should look at things. But I think we tend to kind of like always back off. You look at the symphony. For years, it was so highbrow, right? But, mm-hmm. you know, they gotta grow up. And so they have the pop series, mm-hmm. you know, which is, you know, take popular music and you bring it together and you put it in an audience. And the audience comes to see it because they're familiar with one thing.
Like when they were doing the movie soundtrack series. I thought that was a brilliant movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, one of the best experiences I ever had was there's a great album by Charlie Mingus called Epitaph. Mm-hmm. And you can hear bits of it in a lot of his music that he did. But he decided one day to do this whole orchestral thing. And it's a band of 30-plus musicians up there, top-of-the-line musicians. And you hear this, and it's like 70 minutes. But it's a complete orchestral work. And it's gorgeous. And you hear some of the themes that he always played with when he did his own music, right? Mm-hmm. And you can see how those things become rejuvenated, reclassified, put into it to create a whole new one, right? Mm-hmm. That's the kind of curiosity you've got to have. I can remember if I would have been 20 and somebody had given me that, I didn't like jazz.
Yeah.
But I remember when in high school, one of the coolest dudes I ever met was, the way somebody introduced him. The dude is a black belt in karate, and he listens to jazz. All of a sudden, I was like, oh, my God, that's like really cool guy. So I'm like, and I'm listening to rock and roll. I'm listening to Stones, Led Zeppelin, Pink Floyd. That's kind of like what's bringing me into Black Sabbath was one of my first concerts, mm-hmm. right? But I'm looking in the liner notes, and I'm hearing, this song was by these other artists, and I started listening to blues. Find out Kansas City is a great blues town.
Yeah.
Which leads to the jazz town. So that was the education. It's like being curious and saying, this is what you do, but the liner notes said this song came from this, and then go into the source.
And following it.
Yeah. And I think that's...
Digging and digging.
Exactly.
Okay. Yeah. So what are some personal experiences or a lesson that significantly shaped your life or career path? Because you've had a lot of experiences that I don't think a lot of people get to.
I've had a lot of experiences that some have been debilitating to an extent. I was not an altar boy. All right. So, my mother wanted me to be an altar boy because my grandmother wanted me to be a priest.
Did you grow up Catholic?
Yeah, very Catholic. Yeah. I used to say the rosary with my grandmother. I hate kneeling.
I know, I do too.
Yeah, my grandmother would have a pillow.
I'm walking to a church and my knees hurt.
Well, my grandmother would have a pillow on her knees, but I was on the freaking floor.
Yep.
But no, there's a way that you grow up, especially growing up without a father, right? I mean, and then growing up in some ways without a mother. Mm-hmm. Because she was a foreign mm-hmm. concept to me when we came back here. So my experiences were outside of the house. That's where most of my growing up was taking place. And it was in the street. It was in the friends that hung out. And I got into trouble. And I can recall, I think the thing that always has struck me is the people in my life that took the time to point out that I was going in the wrong path. Mm. Were people that were incidental to my life in terms of I would see them at school. They were my teachers. They were the librarians. Mm-hmm. They were people who said, come on, you're better than this. Even though I was doing everything to prove them wrong, they kept believing. And they have always been an inspiration to me. So when you ask that, like for me personally, I think it's been that in my life, when it was the most essential time for me to be alive, that moment where you're starting to create your ideals and your ethics, in spite of all the mistakes you're making, somebody's taking the time to say something to you and point you in a direction. That to me has been I think, when I abstracted from everything else, if there had not been mentors in my life, I'm not sure where I'd be.
How does that manifest in your life now?
I mentor others. I'm always I don't think there's any information out there that I can own that is so mined that I would not give it away to somebody. You know what I mean? And these teachers did for me things that went beyond their classroom, you know? It wasn't like in the classrooms they were teaching me these lessons. They would see me somewhere and say, hey, I got to talk to you. Mm-hmm. Or they would go out of their way and hunt me down in my classroom and say, hey, I think you ought to read this, right? I mean, I had a librarian that did that. I think you just have to be open mm-hmm. to those things happening and realizing that you can't plan those moments. And so when I have the ability to be able to, if somebody comes to me and asks me for something, if I know I'm going to take the time, and if I see that they're receptive to me saying something to them, I'm going to say something to them. I'm going to say, hey, you know what? But only because somebody did it for me. Only because, so, I mean, reciprocity is really, I think, the way we should live our lives ethically.
I think that's really the only thing that we can give to each other.
Yeah.
There's just these experiences that I hope this makes your life journey easier.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Okay. So what's an actionable piece of advice that you would share with our listeners?
Man, it's one that really, I don't know if it flies in spite of all the things I've said, but it's show up.
Show up.
Show up. If somebody invites you to do something and says, hey, I'm interested in this, and you have an interest and you say, yes, show up for it. Granted, there are times life gets so complicated, you can't. Mm-hmm. Well, make amends. Mm-hmm. Because if something becomes really important and you get an opportunity, you show up for it. So if somebody tells me, hey, I need an artist to do this thing, and you go, oh, okay, I'll do it. Then you're sitting there going, well, you know, they really don't need me. Somebody else is going to show up. You could back out. You've let them down. But more importantly, you've let yourself down because at that point you wanted to do it. So if somebody invites me to something and I say yes, unless I couch it with, okay, look, I'll really try, but I can't promise you.
Right.
But if I say I'll be there, I have to be there.
Yeah.
In spite of whatever it is. And there are moments you forget. Yeah, you know, that's the embarrassment of life.
Right.
But show up for things. And even if they're not things for you, show up for others. Mm-hmm. You know, there's nothing to be said for. I've done poetry readings where they took me across the state and only two people showed up. Mm-hmm. Were those things defeats or failures? No, because I've also had it the other way around where way too many people were there, you know? Mm-hmm. So, but in the moment, I shared what I had, even if it's with two people, it was important, mm-hmm. right? So no, I think you show up in spite of what things might turn out to be. Don't have a judgment. And some things turn out really well, you know. But yeah, be there when it happens. That way you can't complain, oh, nothing ever happens. Well, you never go.
Well, yeah.
You get invited and you just stay home.
Make things happen.
Yeah, be a part of it. Yeah.
Go out and be.
Yeah.
Okay. What is it for you that you love most about Kansas City when you're here?
There's the familiarity you have, right? So I'm going to take it now to car culture, right?
Okay.
So years ago, when I worked at a law firm, and my money was a little bit more steady. So I bought a little used BMW, right? I had two of them. One went under, and so I bought another one. But there was something about that BMW that I just loved so much. Somebody always told me, you know, that German engineering, the way that those cars take corners. And I had a little 325i, beautiful little car, very manageable. And I remember the first time I really knew what that meant was I'm driving down, you know, that drive where you go to take I-35 and you're coming down Southwest Boulevard.
Yes.
And there's that little bank that goes in there. It's kind of got a little hug. Hug.
Yeah.
And I remember going, oh my God, I got to slow down.
That's fun to drive.
Yeah, it is. And like I said, I got to slow down or I'm not going to make this curve. That car made it so easy. I'm going, God, how far could I push it? And I didn't try. I wasn't reckless.
Sure, right? Sure. We don't condone recklessness here on this podcast.
But it made me realize how much I know of this city, right? That I could make a sense of, oh, I'm coming over here. This is going to happen. And know that my car could do that. Mm-hmm. Now I take that same thing with I drive trucks now, little Ford Rangers are my favorite thing. I can't do that. Mm-mm. But I know that road enough to know what happens, you know? So it's that familiarity of things. So I just use that example of a road, right?
Yeah.
But I also know one where, if I need to get from one place to another in a snowstorm, since I don't have snow tires and I'm not going to put chains on it, how can I get this little flat truck all the way over there? And I've, in all the years, and granted, we don't have as much snow as we used to, I've not gotten stuck. You know, I've always made it back, except one time on this little hill right by my house, but I could walk literally next block over. But I think it's that familiarity of knowing things. Yeah. And knowing the place you're in enough that you know where you're safe, and you know where you're taking a chance, and you know where you're going to have a good time, and you know where you're likely to run into people you haven't seen for a long time, and you do. And then the other part is spring, man. When spring hits Kansas City.
Oh, it's beautiful.
And it's the mentality. You know the minute spring hits.
People are waking up.
Well, they even if it gets cold the next day, they've already in their mind said spring's here. It's not changing. And it's like a collective feel, right? The parks open up and people are everywhere. And that's the beauty about this thing. I hate the seasons. Honestly, I hate winter.
Really?
I cannot stand winter. I just cannot do it. Yeah. But I tolerate it because spring is so beautiful. Fall is so intense.
It's the fall.
But I'm a summer person. I love summer. I don't care how hot it gets.
Okay, well.
but spring and fall, oh my God, they're delightful. They're
great. Those little windows of just not the extremes.
Yeah.
They're just so nice to enjoy.
Like the weather we've had this last week and a half.
I know, gorgeous. And then
after 10 below.
Really chilly today. Well, that's, yeah. So with the familiarity, are there any local leaders or influencers in Kansas City that inspire you? And if so, who are they?
Yeah, I think it's just my peers, honestly. Artists, musicians, people that I've worked with, people who I see, regardless of the things that go on, art is so important. They're going to persevere, move on. Pandemic, I think to me, it showed my community in the best light. Because I'll give you one example. I've done a little acting. Not going to put myself out as one, but I love the idea of it. It's terrifying. But I remember a girl's name is Katie Gilchrist. So we're all sitting under pandemic, and I did not mind pandemic, honestly. I thought it was a nice reset for me. So I'm watching her. She's using Facebook, and she says, somebody gave her a birthday or something was going on. So she and a friend drove under pandemic. We were all quarantined to their driveway and put on a little show for them in funny costumes and got in it and then put it out there. If anybody wants one, let me know.
That's fantastic.
Boom, and people are doing that, right? There was another person, Molly Murphy, I think was her name. I should make sure, but she got cancer. We knew she was going to die. And she put it out there. I'm going to be out there taking hugs. And somebody made this thing so she could hug people.
They made her a suit.
It was, man, you know, it's like, I get so emotional sometimes because it's those little things of creativity bounded with this idea of the belief in the goodness of people and how we can, as small as a thing may be, it can have an impact.
Right.
And it can be like this incredible thing, but it just seems so simple. Those things to me, I've given you a couple of names, but I could name you tons of things like that happen.
Yeah.
And usually around creativity, usually driven by artists. So those are my heroes are small things like that.
It's the artists that remind us that we're human. I mean, I'm just saying, you know, my own little shameless plug. It's the pandemic, I think, gave us a weird window that let us kind of see who we could be in
could
other
be.
Ways just
yes.
because it stopped the world. It's such a weird halting pace. But I digress. I don't want to get into the pandemic. We're going to talk about the future of Kansas City and what role do you hope to play in that?
I think always just as a citizen that's involved that feels they have a voice as many of us do, you know, 2.5 million of us that live in this community. There are challenges, though. I mean, I love the idea of development. I understand it. But I don't like the idea of development at the expense of so many good things. And right now, I think, you know, Kansas City, its history has always been driven by real estate. Real estate has always been, and I think, imagine that's going to be everywhere. But there's something specifically about if you own it, you can dictate what it is, right? And so you've seen now you have in the West Bottoms, there's a big change going on down. There's a lot of infrastructure being put in to build housing that goes along the river. Berkeley Park has the big construction that's going on. There's a Casey Curran Stadium at one end.
Yep.
You know, all this mass of things. The only thing I worry about is that sometimes you create these things and then you start to, by chance or just the way things work out, it becomes an exclusionary thing. Mm-hmm. So all of a sudden it's not as open as it used to, mm-hmm. right? Sometimes the architecture begins to look so similar. Mm-hmm. It's like you can drive 27th and Troost right now and it looks exactly like you're in the crossroads in some parts, where any development that's happening north of the city, south of the city, it's like it has this cookie cutter look to it. Mm-hmm. The other part too that we're losing is we're losing neighborhoods to a great extent. I think the idea of single family housing in the urban core is more like, you know, we should give all that up and just put more density, put more people. The train,
yeah,
that's expanding. Mm-hmm. It's a beautiful thing, but when is it going to go north and east and west? Right? Right, there has to be this kind of thing. It just can't be driven only by tourism as the place you want it to go. So there's a lot of challenges, and how do you make a city that stays equitable mm-hmm. when we are already beginning to see incredible price ranges? You know, housing stock is down. A lot of corporations are buying housing and then renting it
right.
at exorbitant numbers. So where do we? And then also the other part that really troubles me is I think there's a lot of young people that are not seeing that the model that they're investing into now requires that you basically spend almost 50% of your income for housing, when it used to be the idea was a quarter.
Right.
Now it's like we don't even guffaw at that. And we fight and struggle about somebody making an extra dollar as if somehow they're not worthy of that. But then how do you survive? The worst thing that happened about pandemic was when some company says, you're an essential worker, we're going to give you a dollar more. Then after pandemic ended, they took the dollar back. It's like I'm going, really?
Well, I mean, or we named you an essential worker and then we beat you to death.
Yeah, yeah. And so those challenges, I think, exist everywhere. Mm-hmm. But when they come to a community like Kansas City, which in some ways has always touted the fact that it's a livable city, that's an affordable city, mm-hmm. and you start to see the things that begin to impinge on that, you have to be very careful. I'm going to be very happy to see the World Cup come to Kansas City.
Yeah.
But I'm so very concerned about what that's going to look like mm-hmm. in terms of the pressures that are put onto construction here, take resources away from there.
Yep.
I love baseball. It was one of the first introductions to American culture for me. Mm-hmm. But I really worry about it being in the crossroads where you've created this one thing organically. And all of a sudden, if we put it here, that's the best thing to do. And I'm going, you know, we built that arena because there was going to be a basketball team, no matter what anybody says. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of the voters that voted on that thing, the Sprint Arena, was they really believed that either we were going to get a hockey team or a basketball arena. It was going to be good for downtown. Instead, we've gotten a big mortgage. Mm. And that's, I think, the fear that I have is that I think a lot of the development and the arguments and the debates and the numbers that really can inform people about what the nature of that debate is are obscured behind committees. Mm. The county legislature took so damn long to finally agree on whether to proceed or not with doing something with the Royals, right? Mm-hmm. They had to override Frank White's veto. Those are indications of things happening outside the margins.
Right.
That we're not aware of. And I think that's what I worry about.
Okay.
But I think that's something to worry about any place that development becomes important.
And that is where it's interesting, your initial major in college, but that's where we as citizens have to remember that this is our, like, we can create the fabric that we want to live in.
It's the polis.
We have to be involved in it to do that, though. So you have to follow this stuff and you have to get your voice heard and you have to take the initiative and be mm-hmm. curious and put the time into it, because it won't just happen. Or it does just happen, but it's because somebody else put the work into it.
And you wake up one day and you go, why does it look this way?
You know? How did this happen?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Could you recommend any local events or organizations that people should know about that maybe they don't?
Oh, God. I mean,
what are your top three? What are your top three?
I sit on a board of an organization called Charlotte Street Foundation, which
works with artists. That's right. You started there like 2 years ago?
I've been involved with them since they started about 25 years ago.
Okay.
They had events down in the downtown, and I started attending them and got to know the organization and been involved in just being in some events. And then I came on the board a few years ago.
Charlie's Place.
Charlotte Street.
Charlotte Street.
Charlotte Street, which is named after a Charlotte Street, and the founders had a connection there. They were all knew each other, and mm-hmm. the arts was the thing that bound them together. So that's an interesting organization. We work with artists, but I think get involved in the public events that take place around art. The first Friday, come back on a Saturday. Look mm-hmm. at the art.
Okay.
You know, if you go there and you see the party on Friday, come back for the post party the next day, because galleries have a lot of work there. Any artistic event, but also sometimes just look at the art that is the city. This city has a very, there are beautiful vistas in mm-hmm. this city. And I think, like, the saddest thing about yesterday is that that plaza that is Crown Center, I mean, the Crown Center, the Union Station, the Liberty Memorial, and the vistas standing on any side of those places that you see of the whole city is magical. Mm-hmm. If there's ever a fog in the city, head over to Union Station or head up to Liberty Memorial and just watch it as it takes over and dissipates.
Oh, I bet that's cool.
Oh, my God. It's like watching an ocean coming in very slow motion and then living, you know.
That's cool.
But those are beautiful moments, you know. I think take advantage of the rivers. I love going to Cobb Point and just sitting there. Yeah, I just mm-hmm. love to watch the water come together there, and it can be so peaceful.
I dig Kansas City because it's such a nice mix of city and not city. And yeah. you can kind of find the places that you need to be in, yeah. you know, as you need to be there.
Yeah, you can go to Weston, mm-hmm. Parkville, and other communities along the river, and you're like in different places, and right. they have a different feel to them.
Yeah. I can drive out at night, you know, yeah. 20, 30 minutes out of the city, and you've got stars.
Yeah.
Like, how often do you get that?
Oh, man. Not often.
Not
enough.
Often. Not, yeah. not often enough for yeah. my taste. So, yeah. all right, our last and probably most important question. Who has your favorite barbecue?
Oh, I drove one time when I was living out in Overland Park, right? I got on I-35. I got on I-435, got up to I-35 and drove all the way downtown to go across the river where my studio was at. And I remember I had this moment as I was driving. I said, oh, I could go over here to either, what's that, Broderick or Bodrick, some barbecue place out there. And I thought, no, I ain't got time. But as I was going, I did an exercise. If I had to get off the highway right now because I had an incredible barbecue Jones, where would I go? And this is like, imagine I'm going 435, taking I-35, coming down and going to. I counted about 14 different places that I could take before I got to downtown. Woodyard Barbecue, Wyandotte Barbecue, mm-hmm. Johnny's Barbecue, Boudreaux's Barbecue, freaking you name it. I mean, I literally, then you could go on down, you go to Gates, you go down to Brian's, you can go to Smokestack, mm-hmm. You can go across the river, and what is that one? God, Slaps is there now.
Yep.
Q39 now has come in. Mr. T's, LC's. I like Mr. T's.
Mm-hmm.
It's always, you know, it's just past LC's. Mm-hmm. I go there and eat every now and then when I'm out in that area. If I'm out that way, I got to stop there. LC's is good. And you just can't go wrong with barbecue unless it's a barbecue that shows up and says, well, we're a national chain. If it ain't got no roots, it ain't got no food.
That's the answer. Anything but national chains.
Yeah, because I think we do it pretty well here. But I will say, I'm not a homer totally and says this is the greatest barbecue everywhere, right? Man, Kansas City barbecue is Memphis barbecue. It's Mississippi up the river, Mississippi up the mm-hmm. cross. So I can go to Memphis and have good barbecue. Mm-hmm. I still prefer my joints here,
mm-hmm.
but I'm not going to be surprised. I'm not a lover of Texas barbecue, but I've had some great barbecue in Texas.
Oh, yeah. There's good Texas.
And North Carolina.
North Carolina's got great barbecue.
Yeah, yeah, they do. But it just doesn't measure to what the flavors are here. Yeah. But the one thing I would say about barbecue, for God's sake, please stop telling the world that Kansas City barbecue is all about the sauce. It ain't about the sauce. I mean, we have some great sauces, but there's some great smoked meats here, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. There's rubs. And that's one of the fun things. I mean, just as a side note on barbecue stuff, it's such a community thing down here. Like in these little areas, everyone comes out for lunch and hits these places and then they're gone, you know, until dinner again. Yeah. So it's crazy.
I can remember when LC started, he just had that little, we used to go to the baseball games out there. So the back road up Snyder Bar. And there would be this big smoker. Mm-hmm. And I remember I would drive by and say, man, it can't be that good. But in my mind, I'm going, that's where it comes from,
wait,
right?
Wait, do you smell
it? Oh, and then one time we stopped. And then could not go to the stadium without stopping. I used to go fishing. And I remember I'd tell my partner at the time, I'd say, I'm bringing back some fish and we're going to eat. Mm-hmm. I'd never catch a damn thing. But I'd stop at LC's and I'd buy them. And I remember one time I bought them and I put it in the cooler. I says, brought it in, I put it down. She picked it up and goes, it's full of fish. It wasn't. It was barbecue from LC's. No, it was Mr. T's. Richards. Richards was a guy that worked at the pit for Bryant's. Mm-hmm. And then he took off and started his own after the old man died. He went on his own. He had a pit down on down here at the downtown. But then he had a place out there where Mr. T's is at. I think it was in that area. And that's where I would stop and pick up because it was the old Bryant's carried over. But it was hilarious, man. I caught a ton of fish.
We don't even have to prep it. Fantastic.
Yeah, it looks like ribs, but
yeah. Jose, thank you so much for coming in today. Oh. I really appreciate getting a chance to talk to you and just some of these, you know, exchanges. Mm. To our listeners, please go follow this guy. His work is all over Kansas City. It's beautiful. There's a lot of different elements that are brought into the murals that you see. Check out some of the videos that we're going to post and go get involved. Go be curious and show up.
Yeah, show up.
Show up.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to the KC Leaders Podcast. Please remember to like, share, subscribe, and leave a review wherever you listen. For more information about this podcast, you can visit kcleaderspodcast.com. And don't forget to check out our other great podcasts like The Buck Stops Here. Streaming now on all major platforms and at thebuckstopsherepodcast.com.